Mini episode 1806 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1806. You have with you here today two of the original dignitaries of the FDH Lounge, Rick Morris, Chris Galloway, and this is actually the first time since the old Sports Talk Network days, past the point, obviously, of our 18th anniversary recently, when people could actually see our gesticulations. So when I go to point to myself, this can actually be seen now. So if you're checking out our video feed here, so Chris, we acknowledged during the recent 18th anniversary of the show here, me and you, two of the original six dignitaries of the FDH Lounge, a crew that will truly never be replicated, Jason Jones, Tim Faust, Nate Noy, Burrell Jackson, among the others. And as we acknowledged during the broadcast there, some sad news that you've gotten recently here, that there will only henceforth be five of us walking this dusty globe anymore. So five of us, unfortunately, are only left. So we did a little tribute on that show to the larger-than-life personality that recently departed.
We're all going to miss the Reverend Burrell Jackson.
They broke the mold, man.
Larger-than-life personality is exactly right. A big heart, a big thoughts, big personality. Just a joy to be around. I consider myself blessed that, you know, I met him as a freshman at Ohio University all the way back in 1990. And I'm glad that I got to have him in my life for, albeit, you know, all these years later, it still feels like too short a time frame. And he will be missed. And I think it's important that his family knows that even when separated by years and distance, you know, for his family to know that there were a lot of people that cared for and loved him. And I think that's in some ways the greatest tribute any of us can have, right? Is how many people have stories about you, wonderful stories, have things to say. You leave a legacy that lasts in people's minds for the rest of their days. And I've read some of the beautiful tributes from folks, like John Rosen and, you know, Elliot Ratzman, yourself. I mean, it's, you know, the reality is that he touched a lot of people, and we are sad that he's gone, but goddamn, Burrell, we will see you on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, and no doubt about that. And again, and I referenced the Facebook thread when I was doing my mention of this during the anniversary shows here. And I said, if anybody stumbled upon that, they might be like, this has got to be made up, right? Like, this can't all be true about one person. All those stories are true. You can back me up on this. Anything that anybody was saying, they're all true. And when the aforementioned John Rosen, friend of ours, asked for some remembrances on Facebook, the first one I came up with was my days at the school newspaper, being on the sports staff there. They run the senior profile when you're graduating. And you know, there were a lot of colorful quotes from me, obviously, but there's only one of them that I remember, and that is, I'm going to go watch Burrell wrestle a bear. That's it.
Since it's our first go around, just picked up a bottle of Tom's Foolery.
Wow.
And I'm going to open it here. I'm going to pour one out for Burrell. I think in tribute, not that he was a bourbon man, but this is actually a bourbon. God, this is not a commercial. They're not a sponsor. Maybe they want to be in the future. This is a bourbon made right here in Northeast Ohio in Cuyahoga County.
Really? Okay.
Made in Sugar Hill Falls.
Uh-huh.
And there's a fun story to this.
Okay.
This little particular vintage, this brand.
Mm-hmm.
The husband and wife that started this brand, and I only just recently learned this reading another book. It's probably on the shelf here behind me.
Okay.
Recently reading another book called The Best Bourbon You'll Never Taste, which is about the 400-barrel contracted batch from 1974 of A.H. Hirsch Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
You non-bourbon people have no reason to know anything about that. However, the fun thing about that is that it was made at the original Michter's Distillery in Pennsylvania, which no longer exists.
Okay.
One of the things that that distillery did was they, later in its existence, had a pot still.
Mm-hmm.
That was a sort of a small producer, produced about a barrel a day's worth of whiskey.
Okay.
Go into a barrel, and they mostly used it for their for bottles for their, you know, gift shop and stuff like that, right? Small mm-hmm. production. Anyway, when the company was going under in the late 80s and it was taken over by the bank, the distiller at Michter's, by the last name of Beam, you might have heard of him, he retired back to Kentucky
mm-hmm.
and bought from the bank the single pot still from the distillery.
Put okay.
it in storage down in Kentucky. So he rescued the original Michter's pot still. Then in late 2011, this, you know, 30 years later,
mm-hmm.
these guys bought it from him.
Okay.
And he and his grandson
mm-hmm.
went and helped him set this up in Chagrin Falls.
Wow.
So this was produced in the old original Michter's pot still from mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. And if you know anything about bourbon history, yada, 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 Michter's is a brand that is back now, highly revered. They have operations in Louisville. And from a historical standpoint, it was an old historical distillery in American, you know, in that period of America where they made a lot of whiskey in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. In the same area where the Whiskey Rebellion occurred that George Washington had to deal with. So anyway, that pot still lives on here in Northeast Ohio in Chagrin Falls. And so here's to you, Burrell.
Well. A unique spirit to a unique man, no question about it there, as far as your toast goes. And I was just about to reference also, too, when you'd said about the books behind you here. I, of course, have the virtual FDH lounge here. And ladies and gentlemen, as you would expect from a transplanted New Englander, this is the study that one would expect from a transplanted New Englander. Nice, classy study that he has behind him here. I have observed that on many occasions in his home. Up in Lake County, Ohio. So, yes, a legitimate, authentic, transplanted New Englander study that we have here.
Well, I don't know about any of that, but I know I'm ready to talk about Championship Sunday,
yes.
Rick's favorite day of the year.
One of my favorite days. I always have to say this whenever we're recording that, you know, the Super Bowl, it's for casuals. You get a lot of people at your Super Bowl parties and they don't know if a football's pumped up or stuffed or whatever the case may be. Championship Sunday, this is the day for people who love football. There's twice as much football. And before I get into my record for the year, as I will make some picks later in the show here, I realized I was actually selling myself short on my record here because I've actually been picking game scores in the playoffs. And so I thought that I was only at 138, 137, and 3 for the year, neglecting to realize I was actually 7-3 on the playoff totals. So I'm actually 145, 140, and 3 going into Championship Sunday. The significance of this is you've got to be plus about 14, I think, for the season to be able to be profitable, i.e. above 52.4%. So that's a few less Super Bowl prop bets that I have to spam in order to be able to make it there, because I'm going to make about 15 or 16 recommendations for the Super Bowl just to kind of grease my path there and see if I can make it. It'll be the fourth time since 2016, but who's counting, for being profitable for the whole season. So I know that you will be laughing in advance at the thought of how much I will have to spam to be able to make it there, Chris.
Well, I wish you well. I wish this will be the second year in a row that I won't be going to Las Vegas for the Super Bowl. It was a tradition that myself and a number of friends had established. It was a great place to go for the Super Bowl because at the time, prior to all the betting going on everywhere, you could go, enjoy one of the Super Bowl parties at one of the casinos, food, drink, and constant betting at the sports book. And, prior to betting being in every state and on every iPhone, it was the only way to do it, right? If you wanted to have 50 crazy $10 side bets or, in all the rest of that and different parlays and things, you had to go to Vegas.
Yeah.
So it was fun. Everyone in Vegas wears their jersey of their favorite team, including the dealers, whether they're in the Super Bowl or not. So you walk around town, you'll see Browns fans, you'll see Dolphins fans or, Jets fans, i.e. Detroit Lions. I mean, anyone who's, never going to be in the Super Bowl. You see their jersey, everybody gives a high five. But anyway, I'm disappointed I won't be in Vegas for that this year. It was always a fun few days. Because also remember, when you're in Las Vegas and the Super Bowl ends, it's still kind of early.
Yeah. True.
So you can head out at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. And I was always amused to be able to check out from your pictures that you would send back what looked to be the Hangover One-esque penthouse there it would always be in the shots. So you got to love it. If you're going to go in style.
If you're going to be there, you might as well have a good time. If you're going to lose a lot of money, you might as well have a good time doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, losing on the things that give you fun, right? So along those lines, we get to game one on Sunday afternoon. It will be 3 o'clock Eastern time on Fox, Washington at Philadelphia. Of course, we all saw that matchup coming, right? Philadelphia is laying 5. The over-under is 47.5. And I'm going to go through a little statistical breakdown here. Check this out on the main page at fantasygrafthelp.com, our end of regular season breakdown. Philadelphia places the highest out of any of the teams that are left in our playoff field at this time. 4th in the overall statistical index here with Detroit, Baltimore, and Green Bay in front of them. I said earlier in the playoffs, like the advanced numbers always love Baltimore, and Baltimore never lives up to that in the postseason. And here we go again with that. But Philadelphia 4th overall, Washington 11th overall. They're the lowest of the teams that are left. So these are the requisite ones in the field here. This is what comprises our statistic. You've got Philadelphia finishing 6th in the final FDH power rankings. Washington was 8th. In SRS, many of these statistics, if not all, coming from Pro Football Reference, so many thanks to them. Philadelphia 5th and Washington 11th in SRS. Margin of victory, Philadelphia 2nd, Washington 10th. Strength of schedule, both teams with a glass jaw, Philadelphia 30th, Washington 31st. Didn't hurt them last week when they knocked off the team that won the best division in the NFL in about a decade. OSRS, Philadelphia is 8th, Washington is 6th. Offensive yards per play, Philadelphia is 11th, Washington is 10th. Third down offense, Philadelphia 10th, Washington 6th. So that's a rare area where Washington has a slight advantage. DSRS, Philadelphia is 1st, Washington is 20th. Defensive yards per play, Philadelphia is 1st, Washington is 14th. Third down defense, Philadelphia is 3rd, Washington is 15th. So, Chris, the numbers tell kind of a stark story here, particularly when you get to the defense, when you get to Philadelphia's edge on that side of the ball. In particular, they're a lot better than Washington is at pass defense, and that is going to be very, very critical in a game like this because Washington's going to rely an awful lot upon that. They're going to try and get the two-headed monster going at running back as well with Eckler and Robinson, but they're going to kind of live or die on whether or not Terry McLaurin keeps playing like one of the five best wide receivers on the planet and what kind of a day that Jalen Daniels can have under the circumstances.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, on paper, Philadelphia is the better team. Mm-hmm. On paper, they're the more experienced team. On paper, they have more weapons. They won the division. They're the higher seed. I think you and I both picked Philadelphia to win the division, did we not? I know I did.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. And I think we both picked Washington third, maybe.
Both of us did.
Yeah, I didn't expect a lot out of them this year because, again, all new, a lot of new personnel. They got rid of some names. They brought in a rookie quarterback who, admittedly, they didn't really believe in, or it certainly had a lot of questions about. Well, those questions have certainly seemingly been answered.
Yes.
I think if you look at it and on paper, Philadelphia's, it has every advantage in terms of how they rank over the season. But I got to tell you, sometimes you just have to throw those things out. In the same way, if you looked at those same stats the way you read them to me, one wouldn't have guessed that Washington basically finished a game behind Philadelphia in the division, right? I mean, they were neck and neck. They split during the regular season. Mm-hmm. So can Washington win this game? Yeah, they can. And I think what's going to happen in a game is Washington's going to come out loose. They're playing with house money. They're on the road. There is no pressure. Nobody expected them to be there. Nobody expected them to win, just like last week. And I think they're going to pull the upset and go to the Super Bowl. I think they're going to get it done. I think the rookie's got a certain amount of magic. I think that team is playing loose and fast. Even when they make mistakes on defense, they don't seem to care. It doesn't ever seem to matter. The rookie quarterback, he seems to be able to overcome those types of challenges. I've got no reason at this point to think that that's going to change. Philadelphia last week looked a little tight, right, at home. I mean, now some of the weather kind of played into that a bit, right?
Right.
But I don't think Washington fears anyone. And I think they know that they aren't supposed to be there and that if they lose, no one's coming down on them. I think all the pressure is on Sirianni and Hurts and them getting it done and getting over the hump. And I mean, all the pressure's on them. And I don't know how well they'll handle it. I mean, I think the one guy who's going to handle that pressure well is Jalen Carter. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's bothered by much. And I think for Washington, somehow up the middle, you have got to find a way to keep him from disrupting that game again and again and again. And if you can do that, I think Washington pulls this game. I think they pull it out.
It's not going to bother Jalen Carter going up against the backup guard for Washington. Trent Scott is going to be playing here. So that's going to make it tough.
And this is not me saying that this is going to be an easy task for the Commanders. It's not going to be. But I think the mobility of Jalen Daniels, I think they're just on a heater right now. And sometimes you just see that, right? Teams just, they get rolling. Mm-hmm. Things just, it's a little bit of magic. And they start going and the next thing you know, it's like, what? How did they get there? But I mean, look, they've gotten it done most of the season. They've won games. They've beaten real teams. They've earned it. And I just think, again, if I'm just basing it on numbers and stats and all the rest of that, the logical person would say, well, Philadelphia will win this game at home. I'm going to throw logic out the window right now.
Well, in looking at this, and a lot of people would say that's exactly what you're doing. As I always say, everything ties together in the FDH Lounge. So here's one where I'm going to go around the world about five times before landing on where this is going. Philadelphia, of course, the city, the notorious headquarters in the 1990s of the outlaw promotion Extreme Championship Wrestling, which changed the entire industry once WWF at the time started ripping them off. Paul Heyman, the mad genius behind ECW, subsequently in WWE in the years to come as a manager or whatever you want to call him for various figures. One, at one point in time, was Brock Lesnar, who was the first person, of course, to defeat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And he would come out and give these promos. Brock Lesnar put the one in 21-1. Well, Philadelphia is 14-1 since October. And you know who put the one in 14-1? Washington. So there you go, Chris. So they've done it.
They look any given Sunday, right? And Washington's not walking in there afraid of them.
Right.
They've beaten them. And they know they can beat them. And again, I think there is value, especially in the first half. The team that's looser may be able to get up on a score or two, settle in a bit. That pressure just – if Washington gets up, say, 10 points going into halftime, the pressure on Philadelphia in that locker room will be immense in front of their home crowd. And I don't know if they have the mental makeup. I don't know if Hurts and Sirianni have the mental makeup to step back, relax, rally, and overcome that pressure. I just don't. I look, hey, man, you know, we got a new president. People keep saying America's back, right? What would be greater than to see the Washington Commanders go to the Super Bowl and watch the new ownership for the Super Bowl go, you know what? We're bringing back the old helmet. We're bringing back Redskins. America's back, baby. You never know. You never know.
We're getting rid of DEI everywhere. Does that mean that we can call them the Redskins again? I mean,
that's right. I mean, Donald Trump's just going to have an executive order saying, bring back the Redskins.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll probably be on Twitter within 48 hours, I'm thinking. But, you know, in terms of some things that don't necessarily.
Or what if we end up with the Chiefs and we should have the Redskins?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's you think that's going to be a tired discourse in the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl? I mean, you know.
I don't care what anybody says. Give me back the old helmet.
Absolutely.
I want bring it back. Win the damn Super Bowl and then just tell the world, you know what, we're going back to what we were.
Yeah. I mean, I've got an old friend who's a Washington fan who that's what he still refers to them as. I, as a Tribe fan, can certainly relate to that, no question about it.
So I still call them the Redskins. I mean, old habits die hard.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of some things that may not weigh in favor of Washington here, certainly they're not great against the run. And that is a thing where they are set up to be really, really kind of punished by Barkley. Now, he didn't have, you know, necessarily his biggest games of the year against them, but he played pretty well against them. But to your point, to be fair, on the other side of the coin here, when you're talking about Sirianni and the Eagles feeling the pressure here, you know, you could feel the collars starting to tighten a little bit watching that game last week when the Rams came back on them. Like they were sitting there going, uh-oh, here we go again. You're getting ghosts of Eagles playoff games in the past that didn't go well. So in terms of Washington being able to stir that in them, yeah, I think a great start is going to be very, very incumbent for them. No pun intended as we're talking politics. But I do think also, yeah, you'll see what I did there. But as far as it goes, though, the problem is, particularly if it's still the first half, you can get up two touchdowns, 17 points, maybe even three touchdowns. And that does not foreclose the possibility of Philadelphia coming back with the running game. That's how darn good they are there.
Please. Man, I mean, look, if he stays healthy, you know, it's just, we all see the greatness, but you know, the issue with him has always been staying healthy.
Right.
And so look, if they get him rolling, again, it should be Philadelphia. Again, the logic behind what they have in terms of, you know, the weapons they have, whether it's, you know, AJ Brown or Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts with his legs as well. I mean, you know, if this thing ended up being a Philadelphia blowout, I'd be like, yeah, okay, the rookie quarterback and the inexperienced, understaffed Redskins Commanders finally collapsed. And it was a great run and amazing. And, you know, we would wake up Monday morning and be like, yeah, that made sense. But you know what? I'm going with a hunch. I'm just going with my gut. I think Washington flips the script, gets up early, and Philadelphia sphincters tighten. The fans start getting on them. They start feeling the pressure from the stands, and they just don't handle it well.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a scenario that could play out. There are some things also that are mitigating against Washington, though, under the circumstances. Rookie quarterbacks historically 0-5 on Championship Sunday. So there's a lot of history to battle right there. And then this next one, there's one where I know that my brother will sometimes give me grief for invoking ancient history in a way that has nothing to do with a current day game. So you be the judge on this one, Chris. This is one where, again, your mileage may vary on the validity of this. This is the first championship game in the NFC since 1986 that involves two NFC East teams. Washington, of course, did not get it done on that day. They lost to the Giants 17-0 in the 1986 NFC playoffs. So the last time they had a chance to do this against somebody from their own division, didn't get it done. Now, having said that, I will say it was an impressive streak when I was looking this up. Four times in 6 years, Washington was in the NFC championship game in the 80s, and they converted on three of them. And then they would subsequently convert on another one the last time that they did for the 1991 season. But your thoughts on that? Any bearing on the fact that last time Washington had to get it done against an NFC East team, they couldn't get it done?
Rick, because not one player on this team was probably even alive.
Okay. So you're siding with my brother then.
I'm siding with your brother. I don't think something that occurred in 1986 when I was a freshman in high school, or actually at that point in 86, I would have still been in eighth grade, would have reached high school later in the year. No, these kids weren't even alive. They don't know. They don't care. It has no bearing. That's why I'm with your brother. I hate when you see the stats that are like, well, you know, Michigan State is, you know, they've lost 58 games to Notre Dame. And I'm just like, great. Well, when we dig up the guys from 1926, we'll let the kids today know that you're supposed to lose this game because you always lose to Michigan State. I mean,
yes,
you know, or whatever. When those kinds of things that are relevant to me are what's happened now, right?
Okay.
In the last, you know, snapshot of a couple of years, right? You have a young team. They're not going to feel the pressure. What happened in 1986 doesn't mean a thing.
Okay.
I think that this is, retribution to the old ownership of Washington. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, thanks for finally letting us go. Now let's go win all the ball games.
Yeah.
No bearing whatsoever. I mean,
okay. All right. Well, yeah.
It's a fun stat, you know, to say like, well, the last time they were here and, when George Washington was president, they didn't do so great. Well, who cares?
And again, not a surprise that the last time they were here prior to the Dan Snyder ownership, the big donut hole in the history of the Washington franchise here, never achieved anything of any note when he was the owner of the team. I'm looking at this slightly different than you as far as the outcome of the game. I'm going a little bit more conventional wisdom on this, and it is not merely because...
Chalk? Your middle name, Rick Chalk Morris, is going chalk?
I'm going with the chalk, and it is not only because, and notice I said only, not only because I look forward to being invited back on the Philly Pulse podcast with the great Joe Stazak out of Philadelphia. Not only because of that. I was on to preview the Eagles' first playoff.
Get you nowhere, man.
So I'm saying Eagles 31, D.C. 20. I think that Washington's going to keep it close a good part of the game here, but I think Philly is going to pull away. I just think that the matchups are going to doom them. I just think Philly with the defense that they have there, I think, you know, again, Jalen Green getting to play against a backup guard. I just think all these things are kind of pointing at that. By the way, and I said this on Twitter afterwards here, not to dig up any bad memories or anything, although I guess I'm about to, but all the people who are on Twitter that were like, how did Jalen Green, Jaden Carter, how did Jalen Carter ever fall to 9 in the draft? Like, We know how he fell to 9 in the draft. I mean, there's two
you
people.
You kill guys with your car, you're probably, you know, you're lucky to get drafted at all.
Yeah. Yeah, there's two people that aren't alive anymore. I mean, and that's where
I don't understand that whole narrative either. Like, oh, all these idiot teams that passed on him. Like, everybody knew he was awesome.
Right.
They just didn't want the liability of being the team that drafted a guy. God only knows how that was going to end, right? When you talk about, you know, legal battles and all the rest of that. Some, you know, I don't know. I don't.
Well,
apparently killing a man with your car in Georgia's legal. I don't know, but
allegedly.
Well, you know, I don't know. If you're good at the oblong ball sport, it's all cool, man. Well, as we've recently learned, all of Georgia's program has a problem behind the wheel. So,
pretty much, yeah. Too soon, but what that's reminiscent of, and I won't mention who. I'm not going to throw this FDH Lounge dignitary under the desk or under the bus for this one, but. Who had mentioned to me a couple of years ago, I think during Tyreek Hill's rookie season, what a great story. What a heartwarming story. This guy was only a fifth round pick. I'm like, bro, do some Googling. It's not a heartwarming story that he fell to the fifth round. Okay.
All right. Hey, it's not how I would describe it.
Yeah. Yeah. And quite frank. And in fairness to our friend, neither did he cling to that point of view once he Googled it. He was like, oh my goodness, glad I didn't say that on the air. So yeah, that was glad I got to him before he got a chance to do that. So
if he did, you could have been a good friend and simply edited out those comments.
I could have. Yes, I'm good about doing that. We like to protect our dignitaries here. So, all right. So we differ on the first game. We'll see what we say about the second game here. It is Buffalo at Kansas City. Chiefs are laying 1.5. The total is 48. 6:30 Eastern time on CBS. And so to get to the relevant statistics here for this one, looking at this again, off of the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, look for 2024-2025 FDH NFL end of regular season breakdown. Kansas City 9th in our final index of statistics, Buffalo 10th. So they're very close, obviously, on this. And both of them scored a lot higher on the final FDH power rankings than 9 and 10. We'll start with that one. Kansas City was second on our final power rankings. Buffalo was third. So as far as the eye test of this guy versus the rest of the statistical index, I think that ended up playing out probably the most accurately. Doesn't always go that way, but it did this time. In SRS, Kansas City was 10th, Buffalo 3rd. Margin of victory, Kansas City 11th, Buffalo 3rd. Strength of schedule, big differentiator here. Kansas City 9th, Buffalo 29th. So in other words, we have the 29th, 30th, and 31st teams in strength of schedule left in the playoffs. You don't often see that on Championship Sunday, but we do this year. OSRS, Kansas City 15th, Buffalo 3rd. Offensive yards per play, Kansas City 21st, Buffalo 6th. Third down offense, Kansas City 2nd, notwithstanding the previous numbers, Buffalo 7th. DSRS, here's where it turns around for Kansas City. Kansas City is 3rd, Buffalo 17th. Defensive yards per play, Kansas City 9th, Buffalo 18th. Third down defense, neither team with anything to write home about here, interestingly. Kansas City 26th and Buffalo 28th. So your thoughts on these numbers, Chris? I mean, it averages out pretty close in the end, but there are some disparities here in terms of the margins between the teams and some of the different numbers.
They're pretty evenly matched teams, and I expect a very close game in this one to come down to the wire in the fourth quarter, if not overtime. They've played those types of games for the last few years with these two quarterbacks and these coaches. I don't expect anything different this go around. I think this game is going to be epic. It's going to be must see TV, but I got to tell you, I'm going Buffalo. And I'm going Buffalo for one reason, and it's not going to be the reason you think.
Well, okay.
I'm going Buffalo because of the refereeing. And here's what I'm going to say about that. The guy who is leading the crew, the referee of this crew, Patrick Mahomes is only like 6-5 in games that he refs.
Okay.
He is probably one of the that's probably one of the lowest winning percentages of any with any referee.
Yes,
that Mahomes has had. You know, the rest of these guys basically just grease the game for him.
Right.
The referee, and his name escapes me, I apologize. The stats I was reading a few days ago does not seem to be the case. There has been such an uproar from the divisional round about, you know, even from like Troy Aikman, other longtime NFL people just pounding the desk going, this has got to stop. You know, that you just give him, you know, and third and long, automatically a PI. He flops, you give him the 15 to extend the drive. When everybody, you know, in that same day in Detroit, you know, Jared Goff gets clubbed in the face and they're like, I see nothing, right in front of him, right? I can understand, different game, different crew, right? But like, he gets clobbered, they're like, no flag. Somebody gets within, you know, breathing heavy on Patrick Mahomes, there's flags flying all over the place. There's been a lot of backlash on that. And I got to tell you, referees are human. They watch the film. They're going to hear it from the league. They're going to hear it from the coaches before the game. And you damn well better believe they are not oblivious to it on social media and on TV prior to.
Okay.
I think two things. I think there's really one thing that's going to happen here. This is going to be a close game where Patrick Mahomes does not, does not get the fucking calls. I think that they say, you know what? We're not getting tarred and feathered with that. Say what you will. It's human nature. And you've got a referee that was chosen, you know, out of the bag to be the guy to do this game. And Mahomes is not a lock in games that he refs. And I think with all that noise out there, and it'll be getting louder and louder as we get closer to kickoff, I think that that's going to help guarantee that this game is not lopsided in terms of how things are called. And I think ultimately that is what decides it and why Buffalo moves on to the Super Bowl. And under my prediction, to play Washington, a team they have played in the Super Bowl in the past.
Yeah, a Super Bowl rematch. Yeah, if you would have said to people at the beginning of the year, we will have a Super Bowl rematch, but it will be Washington and Buffalo.
Didn't see that coming.
No.
I can't recall you, but I didn't see Buffalo getting there either. I thought they were going to take a step back. I still had them winning the East by, you know, a hair, but I thought this team was going to be in far worse condition because of losses on the roster,
right?
Than they are. And, you know, but again, another team that has just managed to get it done. Josh Allen having a great year. They're learning to run the football. I mean, they trade for Amari Cooper, and can we have a conversation about how just instantaneously with the snap of a finger, Amari Cooper goes from having a great season to being completely washed? Like what the hell happened there?
Yeah.
I think it's Buffalo. I think it's a hard fought game, you know, and another guy that's almost washed, Kelsey. I mean, this should be his last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he should stick around for another season. You can see the skills and the speed and everything. It's all degrading. He's getting old. And he might be tempted to try to come back one more year, but I really don't think he should. But, you know, I think the Bills finally get over the hump. I think the Bills get into the Super Bowl and play Washington. And I think, you know, my prediction is that the Bills finally get it done. They finally get that Super Bowl.
Okay.
Because at that point, the stage will be too big for the rookie in the lesser talented, lesser experienced Washington team. So I think this is it. This is the year for our Lake Erie brethren up in Buffalo.
Okay.
If it can't be the Browns, you know, I'm thrilled that I think it's going to finally be the Bills.
Well, I mean, as somebody that roots for the Dolphins, I can't really co-sign that. But I will say, I picked the Bills. I picked the Bills to win the division before the year also. Kind of like you, more or less by default, that even though they were going to, it was kind of a year to kind of retrench, so we thought, they would still win the division. Basically, you know, the taller than Mickey Rooney award in the AFC East. You and I both saw that the AFC East was not going to be what it was cracked up to be, and we were right. I will also say, too, to go back to what we said about Washington before, a point that I forgot to make. I don't generally forget to give myself credit, but much like Houston a year ago, when I didn't pick them to make the playoffs, but I think I picked them to win like 8 games when the whole world said they were going to suck.
Yeah, the whole world was like 2 wins, and you were like, no, Houston will be in a playoff hunt till the end. And I remember that episode looking at you, thinking, listening to you going, I didn't get to look at you then, not like I do now. But I remember thinking, the hell is he talking about?
Well, you know, you get to see me.
You were one of the few that were high on Houston because nobody else was. But, man, as that season unfolded, it was like, I don't know, what did Rick know and when did he know it? And
that's reminiscent of this year with Washington. I picked Washington for 7 wins when everybody thought they were going to suck. So both years, I didn't nail it on how good they were going to be, but I think I was closer than just about anybody else. Because
you were higher on them, even though we both picked them for third. I had them at like, 5 or 6 wins tops. I did not believe in this squad and what the rookie has done. I mean, look, it shows you again, right? How important quarterback is. How many times on this show have I said to you, it's all about the quarterback? Like when I used to look back on those like 0-16 Browns teams, and I would make the outlandish comment to you, they'd be like, they're not that different than the NFC championship attaining Green Bay Packers, other than Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah.
And I think people would look at me like I had 4 eyes. Right. Yeah. But I would look at the roster and I would say these rosters aren't much different other than one guy.
Right.
And I think you saw that in Houston last year and you saw it this year in Washington. Right. That Washington roster. I mean, remember before the season when people were thinking the Browns were going to have a great season and all that? And people were like, oh, that's a guaranteed win for the Browns, right? Their roster's so much better, right?
Right.
If you go down through that roster and you player by player and you go, you'd still probably go, yeah, the Browns have a better roster, right? I mean, other than one position.
Sure.
The most important.
But here's the thing, though. The commonality.
So important quarterback is, right? It's proven out, right? Allen, Mahomes, Daniels, Hurts, right?
Right.
All mobile quarterbacks. The game has changed.
But
you're only as good as your quarterback.
Sure. But here's the thing though. I will say this, that if I had known Stroud was going to be as good as a rookie or Daniels, I would have picked them to make the playoffs. I was looking at what the general managers had done, filling holes in the offseason. That's a big thing with me. I always study the roster management, who's filling the holes, who's getting things done. Washington did the same thing in this past offseason, and even gotten to guys like Bobby Wagner, right? Same thing Houston did a year ago with filling holes. And those are the teams that are poised to kind of make a little bit of a jump here. So That's kind of what I see. By the way, anybody that was looking at you like you had 4 eyes when you said that, in all fairness to those people, I think you were wearing spectacles on that day. So let's.
It was 6 eyes. I don't know.
But okay.
The bottom line is I've pounded the desk on this for years, is that for a lot of these rosters, there's not a lot of difference other than the one position. Right. I mean, I can tell you right now, I can look at the Bills and I can look at the Browns and say, just take the quarterbacks out and match up the rosters.
Right.
Like it just, even on paper, the rosters feel the Browns might even have a slightly better roster.
Sure.
Right. I mean, it shows you just how important quarterback is. I mean, it's just, that's it. If you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a thing. You got nothing. Right. And what Washington did was probably unbeknownst to them, ahead of schedule, they drafted a kid who turns out was fantastic, better than anybody most of us ever thought.
Right.
And despite his having a good college career and winning the Heisman and all the rest of that, there were certainly questions about him in a pro system, et cetera.
Yeah.
And the speed of the game, I mean, it never mattered to him. And so just like that, Washington had a quarterback. So even though I would say in some ways their roster is not as good as it was last year, they're way better because of one guy.
Well, and in fairness, I would have picked, and I think a lot of us would have picked him to have a great rookie season had we known. This was one of those now it can be told articles. It was on ESPN last week, which ESPN seems to have a disproportionate amount of now it can be told articles over the years. This one was about apparently he's been, since his breakthrough year at LSU, I think, like, working with virtual reality stuff and, like, watching things in the game, he sees things at, like, 1.75 times normal speed. And that's part of his psychological training, his visualization, whatever. So when you, it's funny because I don't think you knew about that article, but when you talk about the game slowing down for him, that's a, you didn't know the half of it, Chris. That's exactly what happened. That's the technological explanation for what you just said.
Do you remember, you remember when a couple of years ago, I mean, a lot of teams, the Browns, I think, were the first to install like virtual reality, like stuff in their building. They, there was a whole article about it. I remember people going like, okay, what are they doing? Right. You know?
Yeah.
I don't, I mean, it certainly would appear that none of the quarterbacks have ever bothered to step foot in it.
Right.
But
it works.
Yeah. Well, do you remember, I know I've mentioned to you, I mean, on air, off air, I do firmly believe that the future, one of the big things for quarterback evaluation is going to be, and I have a German Shepherd here in my lap harassing me. You can see the snout. Look at this. Look at this beast right here. Just, you know, giving me trouble. You know, we talk about things like the Wunderlich and all these other nonsense. And I've said this many times, the team that figures out how to figure out neurological speed in the brain of a quarterback is going to be the first one that unlocks what you're talking about.
Right? Yeah.
How they process, how quick. That millisecond matters, how quick they process what they see and how quick they make a decision and then execute. And that all comes down to how fast the synapses move, right? We saw it, you know, with quarterbacks through the years. Brandon Whedon, right? Like, you think, oh, he's an older quarterback, a lot of experience. You know, this won't be a big challenge for him to take a step up and everything. Well, guess what? Those synapses in his brain just didn't fire fast enough, right?
Yeah.
Then you get a rookie like Jaden Daniels, and it's clear those things are there. It's you know, otherworldly. The team that can figure out how to slap the little, you know, diodes onto a quarterback and throw stuff at them in virtual reality and measure those little synapses firing away in their brain. One of these teams is eventually going to do it. And some quarterback's going to come out and go, man, those, you know, Minnesota Vikings, really, they took me to the hospital and they put me in a machine and they stuck all these things. It was the weirdest dang thing. I've never been through that. You know, that's going to be the first team that finally figures out how to get a quarterback that can process quickly and is more likely to be successful.
I think it's coming.
Yeah. No one's done it yet, but there's going to be a moment where the neurological firing of that is going to be sudden. They're going to talk about it like they do with hand size, you know?
Yep.
Hand size is the old school. Oh, look how small or big his hands are. Like, you know, he can grip a football. It's not about that. It's about this. It's quarterbacks. Yeah. It's all about this. And the ones that have the brains that fire the fastest are the most successful. I guarantee you Tom Brady's brain fires quick. Joe Montana's brain fires quick. Jaden Daniels' brain fires quick, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the future. And I, you know, that's what I see in Daniels. I see a guy that processes really quick. And that gives him an otherworldly advantage. Now, whether he's accomplished that through virtual reality training or whatnot, I don't know. Maybe it helps enhance that quickness, right? Gives them another step up. But I think that's where teams are going to have to figure that out. You know, they've got to dive inside the neurological when it comes to quarterbacks and go, how fast does your brain work? How fast is that CPU?
Well, and there's a couple things about that with the brain processing and the virtual reality part of it. I talk about this on the show all the time. One of the things that's funny to me, the great 1994 movie that Michael Douglas and Demi Moore were in, Disclosure, which that's a movie about sexual harassment and all that kind of stuff. The shoe was on the other foot, blah, blah, blah. The subtext of the movie was all the
stuff. Deshaun Watson denies ever seeing that movie.
That's right. The subtext of the movie was all this virtual reality stuff that's coming. This tech company up in Seattle, and it's like, you watch the movie today, you watch it like 30 years later, and you're like, is any of this stuff really going to materialize like they said it was going to? Like where you step into a room and everything. It's so funny to watch this, that like it's still 30 years later, we're still waiting for that. But 25 years ago in the Super Bowl, this is a low-tech version of what we're talking about. Kurt Warner. What do we talk about? That he was in the Arena Football League, processing speed, my man, processing speed. 25 years ago, we saw a guy doing this. And Daniels is just the high-tech version of that. So I got a couple things here I'm going to read you statistically here for the AFC Championship game. I don't think these are going to necessarily bend your opinion one way or another, but I will note that consecutive title game appearances historically in the history of the league, the most it had been until a couple of years ago was Oakland, five times in the 70s, only made it to one Super Bowl. That was, of course, beaten by New England, making it eight times. That overlapped. The eighth and final year of that streak was when they beat Kansas City, which started a seven-year streak here. So you talked about this before, that inauguration day this past week. The last time there was a team in the AFC Championship game that did not include the Patriots or the Chiefs, the Tea Party had yet to come into being back in early 2010. So think about that. We're in a real time capsule here on that one. Buffalo, they are 0-7.
Who would have Jim Trafficking rooted for? That's all I want to know.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Probably Buffalo because of the Rust Belt thing, right? Probably. Now, Buffalo, 0-7 streak on the road in the playoffs since the 1992 AFC Championship game. I prefer not to say where they won on the road in that championship game. The next year, by the way, they would win in Kansas, or they would host Kansas City and win. So that was Joe Montana's last time on Championship Sunday, going down at the hands of the Bills. So in one instance, anyways, Jim Kelly greater than Joe Montana.
Did it snow a little during that game in Kansas City?
I think so. It was like 10-7. Yeah. It was some kind of big cluster. So, yeah, that was a win at home. There's an asterisk on that 0-7, though, because that includes the Music City forward lateral game here, which, the Tennessee fans still want to tell you was – legitimate and a backwards lateral in, the 1999 playoffs. But, I think that was one of the first sporting events of the 21st century. And it was a little bit of a precursor, if I may make the editorial statement, about the tough days that would lie ahead in the 21st century, having to watch an injustice like that one play out. A lot of editorializing there. Okay. Now,
to put up with it when they watched that field goal that was no good carry the Broncos into the Super Bowl.
How come nobody outside of Cleveland ever talks about that? That's one of the weirdest things ever. Are we the only people that have eyes? But,
I didn't live in Cleveland at the time, and I wasn't a Browns fan. I watched that game all the way back in New England, and I was like, that wasn't any good.
Yeah.
But I think what happens is that, the Broncos mystique of that run.
Yeah.
And that time frame in Elway just overshadows how it happened, right? Like, no one wants to acknowledge the fact that, the Browns got hosed. That field goal was no good. And the Browns should have been on to the Super Bowl, right? I mean, no one wants to acknowledge that because they're just so invested in the whole Elway thing.
Sure.
I think that's why, but there's no damn way that field goal was ever good.
That's exactly right. No question about it. Big asterisk on that one. And a couple of years ago on the show, when I had Vance Johnson on and we were talking about the drive, I said to him, I said, you don't know the pain that young Ricky would have been in had he known he would one day be interviewing you about this. It was enough for old Ricky at the time to be able to get through something like that. But
I bet Vance had a chuckle about that.
He did. But another thing here, we've talked about this. I think we talked about this probably when we did the division previews at the beginning of the year here, when we were talking about how far Kansas City was going to go, because both of us, and when I was recently on the Philly Pulse, I explained that to these guys, why you and I picked Cincinnati to make the Super Bowl, because we thought it was going to be Cincinnati, KC, Houston as the trifecta in the AFC, Kansas City having to play Houston, a couple of years ago, whoever didn't have to play the other two teams between Kansas City, Cincinnati, and Buffalo made it to the Super Bowl. Ironically, Kansas City played Houston, and we don't give any credence to that because we didn't look at that as being a particularly tough game for them with the year Houston had, and we were right. But I think we talked about at the beginning of the year, teams stubbing their toe, going for the three-peat on Championship Sunday. We've seen it a couple of times, almost always memorably, in the NFC, San Francisco in 1990 against the Giants. I remember being so shocked at the time. Watching that one. That was, of course, Montana got hurt, but you had the greatest backup in the history of the game and Steve Young coming in there. So that shouldn't have necessarily made a difference. Dallas, 1994, the end of the trifecta against San Francisco. The 49ers finally get over. Interestingly enough, these two teams also meeting on Championship Sunday, 1971, and more memorably, 1981, the catch game. in the AFC.
Still cry over that game in 81.
That game was
nine-year-old Christopher still weeps.
That game was absolutely remarkable. In the AFC, Pittsburgh in 1976 against Oakland. Now, you had no Harris and no Blyer, in all fairness. I hate to ever say anything in all fairness when it comes to Pittsburgh, but it is true. Oakland also stopped Pittsburgh's run going for a three-peat in 1980, albeit Pittsburgh didn't even make the playoffs that year. So I guess they didn't really so much stop them directly as indirectly in that time. And then subsequently, you had Denver in 1999. They didn't even make it back because it was one of those things where, you know, like the 2018 Cavs when LeBron left, it was kind of like that with the 1999 Denver Broncos. Like, yes, they are the defending Super Bowl champions in name only, but we know it's not the same team. So there have been a couple
Gary
of times.
Trotting out Gary Kubiak is not the same as trotting out John Elway.
That's true. That's true. So you look at it here, and again, it's, you know, history is on the side of Buffalo here, stopping them in this game, because you've never had a team even make it back to the Super Bowl when they've won the two previous times. It's not like, you know, in the NBA when Pat Riley, and I think he even didn't he even trademark three-peat, you know, made it back to the finals, but lost to the Pistons.
Pat Riley still makes money every time that happens.
Yeah. So he'll probably make money for me just having said it here on the show. There's probably some
algorithm. You owe him a dollar.
Well, you know, that's the least I can do for the man who stole LeBron James from the Cavs in 2010. But, you know, this is one of those things here. And then this is a non-statistical, you know, thing here, more of a straightforward kind of a note. But both teams depending very, very much on ball security. And I've seen a lot of takes out there this week that if there is a team, I mean, if it goes by one turnover either way, I don't know that it makes a difference. If somebody's plus two in the turnovers, they're winning this game. Would you agree that it's as cut and dried as that?
I think that is the most likely because, as I said earlier, I think this game is tight and nip and tuck the whole way.
Yeah.
And so any advantages like that, whether it's penalties, turnovers, is going to tip that scale ever so slightly for one or two of the teams.
And this is one of these things where, again, in looking at this, there is so much that points to it. It's really kind of – it's interesting to me that Kansas City's the favorite in this one, albeit, I mean, 1.5. You can't hardly get to be much shorter of a favorite on Championship Sunday or whenever than they are.
Saying they think the Bills are a better team, except it's in Kansas City.
Yes, yes. It's really just the 3 points that are making Kansas City a favorite, which I am famously skeptical of that whole thing on whether it should even be 3 points. But I will just say, in looking at this, so the conventional wisdom really kind of points towards you with Buffalo on this. So even though you picked the dog in the game, I feel like you're sort of rolling more conventional wisdom like I was in the NFC Championship game. I'm just going to say this is where I'm not going conventional wisdom in the sense of I got to see it, and I got to see it play out. Now, I might be outsmarting myself because there was a year, this was before St. Louis broke through and won the Stanley Cup very painfully for you in 2019. This might have been maybe 2016, one of those years in there when they finally beat the Blackhawks. And I went out on a limb and I picked them to win that series against all evidence. So I guess that experience should tell me pick Buffalo, but I'm not. Maybe this is lazy, but I'm going to say guilty until proven innocent. Go in there, do it, show me you can win the game.
I get what you're saying, but you're picking the defending champs with the best quarterback, quote unquote, at home. Not really out on a limb here, right?
Yeah, I mean, everybody seems to be pointing towards Buffalo. And like you said, the conventional wisdom that if they were on a neutral field, it would be Buffalo. But that's a thing where, again, just defensively, the way that Kansas City plays – and again, they're at pretty much full health on both sides of the ball for the most part. And again, with the caveat of Rashee Rice, as I have noted previously, he's not coming back this year. But, you know, they didn't have Hopkins at the beginning of the year. They didn't have Hollywood Brown all year, albeit I certainly know as a fantasy owner over the years what a tease that guy can be. But, you know, you look at that, there is, I think, playoff Kelce. Playoff Kelce has me first in my playoff fantasy league right now because he's the one guy that I took off of Kansas City. It's one of these leagues where you take one player or element, you know, defense or whatever from each team. I took Kelce. So far I'm in first place, sitting pretty with that. So I'm going to say Kansas City 27, Buffalo 24. Not because I want to. I'm like the rest of the world. This makes me puke. I'm sick of Kansas City. We don't need Taylor Swift dominating half the broadcast. But, I mean, here we go again. Prove me wrong, Bills. Prove me wrong.
It's not an unreasonable pick. It's the same reason why every year when the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl. Why, Chris, why do you bet? Why do you take Kansas City? Because they have the better quarterback. Yeah. They did the same thing last year and made money, right? I mean, yeah. I do it every year, right? You know, when the Patriots played the Falcons, right? Chris, why did you put, you know, five large on the Patriots? They have Tom Brady, right?
Yeah.
So this is similar, right? It doesn't you picking the Chiefs is I'm not mocking you. I mean, it's not a bad pick, right? I mean, the history aside that you've outlined, you've got, you know, one of the best coaches proven, Andy Reid, the best quarterback in the game currently, Patrick Mahomes. They're at home with a better defense than the team that's visiting. If I added up all those things, you would say, yeah, I'm picking that team, right?
Yeah.
You know, I just think that this is, I think that, you know, I think in some ways that I'm actually being a little irrational. I don't know what other people are doing, but, you know, on paper, they're relatively even. You'd probably give a slight nod to Kansas City, but I think that this is Buffalo's year. I think this is the year that Josh Allen says, no, I'm not losing. I'm not taking a back seat to Patrick Mahomes. I just think that this is the year that Buffalo finally does it. Is there a lot of logic behind that? No, I mean, I could point to, you know, some of the stats and some of the things why I think so. But if you look at last week, it's not like Josh Allen lit the world up on fire with his passing game. What do you throw for 128 yards or something?
Yeah, not much.
You know, that's not going to get it done against Kansas City.
Right.
So he's going to have to step up big time. I just think that collective, you know, at some point the magic runs out for Mahomes. Right. The fairy dust just doesn't spread far enough across the field to bail him out again, late in the fourth quarter, and deliver him a win. I think that's how I see it happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing here, too. I mean, there are people that have looked at precedents for this and that this might be one where, I guess, the 2006 season, Colts, Patriots, Peyton Manning finally breaks through. So if you're looking for something like that, you might be able to find precedence here in this. I do think I would take Philadelphia in the Super Bowl. I would lean towards them, notwithstanding the fact that right now, you know, Jalen Hurts is not only a noun, but a noun slash verb, as he has been ever since the last Washington game here. So that hashtag see what I did there. So I do think Philadelphia would have the edge in a Super Bowl, but it's interesting. I'm looking at a Philadelphia-Kansas City Super Bowl. You are looking at Washington-Buffalo. We diverge completely on this one, entertainingly so.
It's what makes it fun, right?
Yes.
I mean, chances are we're going to end up with half right, right? It'll be Kansas City and Washington, or, you know, Buffalo and, you know, or, you know, whatever. Buffalo and Philly, right? Who knows?
Yeah.
But I like the fact that you and I are on opposite sides on both games. I mean, that's fun. I like it.
Well, I mean, you know, for two guys that both agreed at the beginning of the year and picked the Bengals, albeit, as I've noted previously, we had no idea how bad that Cincinnati defense was going to be. That was the ultimate sort of thing there.
And you and I both questioned it and wondered if that defense would be good enough, but we still glossed over it and said, yeah, a healthy Joe Burrow, some of their problems on defense on the back end, they'll figure it out, right? We questioned it in the episode saying, I have some concerns, but they'll figure it out. It'll be good enough.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow will overcome it. Well, we were wrong, right? We were right to question it. We just didn't take it far enough to say, No, that's going to be the thing that's going to keep you from making the playoffs is that defense.
Yeah.
We both questioned the defense. We were right to.
Yeah.
The depths of the problems on that defense, we didn't realize it was going to be that bad.
That is true. Yeah. And, I think in looking at it here too, this is one of these things. Again, I'm always fond of cross sport analogies here. You won't see Burrow winning MVP this year, but he had a year similar to the one that all the baseball media people cry themselves to sleep about every night. Was, I think, was it 1987 when Andre Dawson was playing for the last place Cubs but won National League MVP? That's the kind of year that Burrow had this year. I mean, he almost dragged them by the scruff of the neck into the playoffs. And that's one of those things here too, where you'll never convince me. The last week of the season with Kansas City resting a bunch of their guys, you'll never convince me that wasn't at least in some part a punk ass move, because you lose that game and you eliminate the only quarterback that's kept you out of the Super Bowl since the aforementioned Patriots Chiefs AFC Championship game for the 2018 season, which, by the way, if D Ford knew how to line up at the line of scrimmage, they would have won that game too. So you'll never convince me that they weren't ducking Burrow by taking that cowardly dive.
Still think that the game meant nothing to them. But you're right. Burrow was the only thing working for the Bengals this year.
Right.
And he should have been considered for MVP because,
Sure.
I mean, he did drag what was otherwise a steaming carcass
Yeah.
close to the playoffs. I mean, he had an amazing year, right? You just wouldn't know it.
Yeah.
That team took a huge step backwards. Huge. And I think there are real questions going forward for them, right? You're
Right.
gonna have a new defensive coordinator. You're gonna, people are looking at Zach Taylor side eye, rightfully so, again. And we'll see what happens. But look, Sunday's your favorite day of the year. We're almost
One of them.
upon Rick's holiday. I
Yeah.
can't wait. It's gonna be good. NFC East clash. AFC rivals. What more do you want as a football fan? Order the pizza, make the popcorn, put the beer in the fridge and get ready, baby.
Yeah. It is going to be an epic day, as it always is. And then, of course, in 2 weeks, we'll get to all go to Super Bowl parties and listen to some takes from the casuals. Like, I hope they show Taylor Swift a bunch of times. So look forward to that on the day that is not for the hardcore fans the way that this is.
Showing her at all. So that'll be great.
Yeah. Well, whoever wants that to be the case is going to get their wish, sadly enough.
In our new America, Rick, there'll be no more Taylor Swift. We're back, baby. We're back.
This is amazing. Well, on that note, Chris, thank you so much for being here for our great Championship Sunday preview for the 2024-2025 NFL season. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1806.